Hello.
Hi, Joyce.
Yes.
Hi, this is Michael Scott.
Hi, Michael Scott. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Am I calling a little too early?
No, it's fine.
Right now is cool?
It's cool. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just trying not to go crazy. How are things where you're at?
Well, they're good. My son John is with me, which is a big help. And he does all of the difficult things, and we're doing these fun videos every day that we're hoping are making people laugh, and about 1,000 people are watching them.
Oh, great. Where can I find the videos?
Well, John's going to post them on YouTube. I think that's the best thing, because everybody who's not getting them is saying, where can I see them? And so I think that might be the thing to do.
Okay. All right. Is he letting you go out at all, or have you been outside at all?
Only to walk on the golf course. And one day we drove into L.A. to pick up some of his editing equipment so that he can do some work from home. And I was afraid he might get in trouble with the police because he came out of his apartment with a mask on and glasses and a hat and a big computer.
Oh.
I thought, oh, boy, looks as if he was robbing the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen that movie, by the way, with Tom Hanks, with Mr. Rogers, about Mr. Rogers?
Yeah, so sweet.
Oh, it really is. Really is. All right, are we ready to go?
Yes, anytime.
All right, here we go. And, hey, thank you so much for doing this.
I'm happy to.
Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. Today I am joined by actress, writer, and producer, Miss Joyce Bulafont. How's it going, Joyce?
It's going really well compared to what everybody else is going through. I'm very grateful.
Oh, there we go. That's what I like to hear in the midst of this whole thing. What all have you been doing, or how are you spending your days right now in the midst of all this?
Well, I said to John, my son John Asher, who's a director and actor, he's staying with me. He came in from L.A. because he didn't want me to go to the market. He keeps reminding me of how old I am. He said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
but I mean, being really kind, and we are kind of decided to use what talents we have to do these little mini videos every day. And it's about a mother and son forced to live together during the pandemic in isolation, in quarantine. And they're just very silly. And people are really liking them and laughing. And we thought, well, if we can bring a little laughter at this time, that's a way of giving. Because you keep thinking, I keep thinking, and I know John does and a lot of people do, they keep thinking, what can I do to help? What can I do? And so we came up with this little idea.
Absolutely. So you guys haven't gotten on each other's nerves yet, have you? So you guys haven't gotten on each other's nerves yet, have you?
No.
No.
No, we haven't. No, we really haven't. But in the video, we do. in the video, we really do.
That sounds interesting. So I cannot wait to see them.
Oh, thank you. How are you doing with your time?
Well, very, very limited. So I'm doing this podcast. I'm doing a little bit of writing for a stand-up that I do. I've been doing that for about a year and a half now. Just trying to be creative and think of ways to keep my mind busy instead of just sitting around doing nothing. So, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Absolutely. So Joyce, so I was reading your bio, and you pretty much have been offered everything that Hollywood has to offer, pretty much. I want to start off.
I've been very lucky, a very lucky girl.
So I want to start off with your early childhood. You were placed in foster homes and in orphanages when you were younger. Is that about the time when you really started to get into entertainment, per se?
I think so. Maybe even a little bit before that. But I loved entertaining. I was only 6, 7 when I had to be placed because my mother and father were divorced and my mother had to work. And so I started entertaining the younger children just by making up stories. I'm dyslexic, so I never could read until I was about 12. And I used to take stories like Little Red Riding Hood or Cinderella, and I'd look at the pictures, and I'd make up my own story for the children according to the pictures. And I'm afraid that some children have grown up someplace around the world who've heard a whole different version of Little Red Riding Hood and Cinderella.
So do you still speak to anybody that was in these foster homes or orphanages all these years later that have become close friends or friends of yours?
No, I don't, because I was in so many different ones. I was... For some reason, my mother was and I were always on the move, and I was always afraid to ask my mother what she did for a living.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We were always moving. But I finally ended up, very fortunately, when my mother married a wonderful man named Charles Pennock, and he paid for me to go to this wonderful boarding school in Pennsylvania called Solbury. And it was perfect because at 12, I couldn't read, and there were very small classes, and it was a very progressive kind of prep school. And I learned so much there about life, about everything. And, I mean, for instance, when we were studying Longfellow, we sat in the field of daffodils when we read his poetry. And it just was a more... experiential learning, which is so important for children who learn differently.
So I've listened to Henry Winkler talk about his dyslexia and how it was hard for him to audition. I know that he said that he would read each line carefully and reread it and reread it. Even when you were auditioning for roles, was it still kind of tough for you with the dyslexia to basically audition for plays or films or whatever it may be?
Well, it was, but by the time I was doing that, I had learned coping skills. And it still is because I misread words. As an example, when I was married to Bill Asher, one day I was reading the paper and I said, "This is so interesting the way this they're saying it." They said, "The New York Times mosquito the man." And I said, "What does that mean?" I mean, in my mind, I thought, that doesn't make sense. I'll read it again. And I read it again, and it said, "The New York Times mosquito the man." So I said to Bill, "What does that mean? Does it mean that they kind of bit at him or something?" He said, "Let me see that a minute." I showed it to him. He said, "No, no, no. That's the New York Times misquoted the man." So I live in a very different world, you see.
Yes. And I can actually, Joyce, I actually can relate to you on a different level. I actually was diagnosed as autistic when I was younger, 7 years old, with Asperger's. So I can definitely relate to the kind of dyslexia, yes.
Your own world. And my grandson, Evan Asher, is also autistic.
Oh, nice, 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 nice. Autism representing there.
Right, yes.
So to go along, and I know you wrote a book about all this, but I'm definitely interested in hearing about this. Walt Disney had a show in mind for you before he had passed away. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, this is amazing. I was doing a film called The Happiest Millionaire, a musical. And I was going to the recording studio so nervous because I'm not a professional singer. I'm an actress who sings. And I was on my way walking down the street to the Disney studio, and all of a sudden, as I passed by Walt Disney's office, he came walking down the pathway, and he said, "Are you going over to record, young lady?" And I said, "Yes, I am, and I'm a little nervous." And he put his arm around me and said, "Don't be nervous." And he said, "And little lady, I want you to know I have some big plans for you." And then he died.
Oh.
I think that was very nice.
No. So what is the what was the show that he was going to audition you for or put you in?
He was going to have Leslie Ann Warren and I were going to be guides at Disneyland, and then Tommy Seale and John Davidson were going to be our boyfriends. Wouldn't that have been fun?
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. No, so no pilot was ever shot or anything like that, or the show did not carry on after his death. No. Okay.
No, he passed away, and A.J. Carruthers was working on the pilot. And I only found out about what it was rather recently. Isn't that funny?
How is it that you found out about it? Was it through someone else who was scheduled to be on the show or work on the show?
I think so. Someone at Disney told me about it.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, am I too old, you think, to be a guide in my 80s?
No. I'm sure that you would be a lot better than some guys that I've seen.
I don't know.
Yeah. But Joyce, I'm a huge Match Game fan. I love Match Game. I mean, I know that you also comment for this in your book, but you say that not everybody on that set was a gentleman. And what are some of your fondest memories of being on Match Game? Because that looked like a really fun show.
You know what was the most fun was dinner time. I mean, there are rumors that people drank at dinner. I did not see that. I didn't see anybody drinking, and I don't know where that rumor got started, except that we were all so crazy, and maybe after dinner even crazier, but I didn't see people drinking. I don't know what they're talking about. But then again, you have to remember, I'm a co-alcoholic. I don't see alcoholism in people. I married four alcoholics.
Yeah.
So maybe they were drinking and I didn't even notice it, you know? I just didn't think about it.
Did you, I know that you have chronicled this in your book as well, but where did the drinking start at? Was it even before you started marrying the husbands that had alcohol addictions themselves?
Oh, well, I'm not an alcoholic, but I'm a co-alcoholic.
Oh, co-alcoholic.
Which means that I feed into the disease. By accepting behavior that is detrimental to me and was to my children. And I didn't learn about that until I was married the second time. And I was given a book by Mariette Hartley called The Co-Alcoholic. And I started reading it. And by the time I finished, I said, "This book is about me." And I said to Ed, my husband, and I said, "You know, he was not abusive, except he was abusive in a, he had demons, and he would yell a lot, and he was a sad person, and I always thought if somebody was sad that I was in love with, that's okay. If they know I love them and I really love them and take care of them, they'll be fine. They won't have to drink." Wrong. Totally wrong. But Mariette gave me that book and it opened my eyes a lot. Not enough that I didn't get involved again with alcoholism, marrying alcoholics. I think it's the sensitivity that alcoholics have that draws me to that personality. I don't know, but I really wasn't aware, you know, that's what I was doing. And then what's wonderful about when Roger, the love of my life, when we finally got married, after falling in love many, many, many years before we were married, but unable to do anything about it because we were both married when we met, It was later that I had gone through going to Betty Ford, and he had gone to Betty Ford, and I learned a lot about codependency, my role in this. And with Roger, thank heavens our marriage wouldn't have worked if he hadn't been a recovering alcoholic. He didn't have a drink for 24 years by the time I lost him. Otherwise our marriage wouldn't have worked because I was getting pretty smart by then, learning about how I fed into the whole disease.
Go ahead.
But I was trying to stop our little dog. John's little dog is barking. I'm trying to get away from him.
Oh, no worries. So, the Roger that you speak of, Roger Perry, was also married to another famous actress, and that was before you guys, got married, correct?
Yes, to Joanne Worley, a wonderful actress, a great singer, and, they were married for 25 years. And I think, at times it was a very happy marriage from what I understood from Roger, and they acted, they did a lot of shows together. And then, the marriage wasn't going well, so that's what made him go to Betty Ford, because he wanted the marriage to work out. He was trying to make it work out. And, but what often happens is when one partner becomes sober, the other partner kind of loses the control that they thought I had.
Yeah.
Because this person is weaker and I'm stronger, and that, I don't know if that's what happened, but it could have been part of whatever happens to a marriage. You know, it's different for everyone. But it was interesting because just at the time that they were getting divorced, instead they were separated, I called a very dear friend of ours, Norman Cohen, who was a friend of Roger's and mine for years, someone we met in 1962, and I called him and I said, I've done something so scary, so awful. I had run off and married somebody. I don't know why, just a moment of craziness. And that marriage really only lasted 2 months. But it should have been annulled, but it was scary.
Yeah.
And I called our friend and I said, you know, I've done something terrible and I'm really frightened. And I was in L.A. and he said, did you know that Roger and Joanne had separated? And I said, oh, no. I said, is he okay? Because all I wanted, I never lost that love and caring for Roger, but I didn't want to be with him because I knew he had a drinking problem. And by then I had learned about it. And I just said, is he okay? I just wanted him to be happy and well. And I said, would it be all right to call him? And he said, well, I'm not supposed to give anyone his number, but I think he'd like to hear from you.
Yeah.
So we did get together and went through a rather scary time with the person that I had married, and it took a while to get rid of that person in my life. And anyway, then Roger and I were free to be together, and we just had a wonderful, wonderful, happy marriage. We lived in L.A., then we lived in Colorado near my children, and we had grandchildren, and we just had a wonderful time. And then we moved to the desert, because we got a little tired of the cold winters, and then Roger became ill. But I'm writing another book about it. The title is I Loved Him to Death, and it's about taking care of someone that you love through their transition and how that can really be a blessing. And he had such a peaceful passing, and what he went through, what we went through together, in hopes that it will be helpful to other people.
Well, that sounds sweet, Joyce. I mean, that really does. I mean, it sounds like you're still staying busy and keeping in your mind is still pretty sharp as well.
I hope so.
So I definitely am a big game show. I mean, obviously Match Game's not the only one that you appeared on, but have you seen the most recent Match Game version or with Alec Baldwin?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
I did, yeah. It's quite different.
It is. It definitely is.
I don't know if they give people funny lines to say that aren't very funny, or if they are... ours all came out of something natural and something internal that was fun. We weren't trying to be funny.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great camaraderie. It was a great chemistry, the way they set things up with a rather guest star man. And then they had Brett, who was very kind of caustic and sophisticated. And then they had Charles, who was hysterical and outwardly gay. And then on the bottom level, they had a pretty lady guesting. And then in the middle, they had Richard, who thought he was the king of the crop, king of the mountain. And then they had crazy people in the sixth seat. And I was one of the crazy people.
Oh, man. I mean, by that point, Gene Rayburn had been in TV for quite some time by that point. He was just a natural at what he did. I mean, between Gene Rayburn and Alec Baldwin, those are two completely different personalities right there.
Yes, I think you're right. I haven't watched the new Match Game very much. It sort of was difficult for me to watch. But don't you think they should invite one or two of the old panelists on?
Absolutely. I know that Joyce Orson Bean had just passed away, and I know that he was on quite a few times with you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. A sweet man. I went to a party once at his apartment in New York, and I always loved the thing he did with the newspaper doing the eucalyptus tree. Did you ever see that?
I haven't, but that sounds interesting.
He was a very sweet man.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys just seem like one big family there, even though I'm sure at times you guys got on each other's nerves, but I mean, it seemed like it was just one big happy family that all like being there, including the contestants as well.
I don't know that anybody didn't get along. I really don't. I had a little bit of difficulty with Richard Dawson, but you have to read my book to find out about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, speaking of your book, I definitely will, let's talk about that. Your book is titled My Four Hollywood Husbands, and, so is that pretty much an autobiography about your Hollywood life and your personal life in general?
Yes, it's really about, it's about alcoholism and codependency, the effect it has on children, with the background of the golden age of Hollywood.
So there's also one other thing, Joyce, that I find interesting about your Hollywood life, and I did not know this, but you auditioned for the role of Carol Brady in The Brady Bunch.
You didn't know that? Oh my gosh, classic story. I was wardrobe cast, the little girl who cast to be mine, and I was showing the producer and the director the wardrobe the Friday before they were shooting on Monday. And every time I came out to show them a new outfit, they just sort of would go, mm-hmm.
Oh.
And they were acting a little peculiarly, and I came out and said, is something wrong? And they said, have a seat. And they told me that New York, who has evidently the final say on everything, had suddenly changed their mind. Florence Henderson had become available, and they wanted her to do the show. And Sherwood Schwartz was really upset. He said, because I want it to be the Lucy show. If you do, it'll be like Lucy. And if Florence does, it'll be more like the Donna Reed show. And we've written it to be the Lucy show. So they had to rearrange everything. They had to recast the housekeeper, who was going to be the straight person, to end up being the funny one. But guess what? It was a big hit. And so everything turned out for the best. I got my own eight children when I married Bill Asher. I had my own Brady Bunch.
Is that kind of one goal that you wish that you would have gotten in your Hollywood career that you miss?
Not really, because, well, maybe the way it would have been written for me, it would have been fun, because I love doing physical humor and I love doing humor. But after that, I did a show called Love Thy Neighbor, and I got to do a lot of kind of fun things on that. That was great.
So, Joyce, is there any projects that, I know you said you're writing a new book, but is there any new projects that I can help you promote that you're working on, or any shows that you're going to be appearing on?
I don't know, but I've been getting requests lately to do voiceovers for cartoons. I don't know why. I did a cartoon once called Sport Billy for Filmation, and it was so much fun. It's so much fun to do voices. But nothing has happened yet. I just sent in a few audition tapes. And it's so hard, you know, when you audition today, it's very difficult. When I was working all the time, you went in and you met with the writers and the directors and the producer, and they could tell you what they wanted. And they say, well, no, not that. That's not the way we were thinking, but you try it this way. And then you do it all different ways, and then they go, yeah, that's it. That's what we want. Yeah, you're hired. Now you're in a room with somebody doing a video, and you're just flying by the seat of your pants. You don't know what they want.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't get to see you personally interact, and you don't get to show what timing you have because you're not working with another actor. You're working with someone just reading lines. So it's not a very good way to cast, I don't think, at all.
And everything has become digital.
Yes, right. Exactly.
There was no such thing as digital when you were working. I mean, not to date you by any means, but there was no internet or computer.
That's okay. It's all right. I don't mind. And what makes me upset is when I get sent a role to play an 80-year-old, they said, well, she doesn't look 80. And I think, okay, well, then don't send me up to roles that are 80.
Yeah.
For some reason, everyone, I guess it's a genetic thing, everyone in my family, including my mother, always looks so young. And my children look so young. And it's a blessing in one way, but when you're an actor and you're sent up for roles for the age you are, you don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Joyce, one final question for you, ma'am, and you've been absolutely generous with your time, and I thank you so much for appearing on the show.
It's so nice of you to ask me. It really is.
Any tips or anything that you would give to aspiring entertainers? I know, like I said, things have changed ever since your days of Hollywood, but is there any tips that you would give?
Absolutely. Be sure you have another career you can fall back on. Very important.
That's
because
definitely.
There will be uptimes and there will be downtimes.
Absolutely. I cannot wait. And I'll definitely be getting one of your books, Joyce, because it sounds interesting. And I look forward to reading the one that you're currently writing. I loved him to death.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Joyce, you're fine. Thank you.
Take care.
Yes,
take
ma'am.
Care, be safe. Stay home.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So if that's coming from you, then I have to obey it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.